Line drive smoked to right center field. Sanchez goes back. This one's over his head. Bounces on the track and over the wall for an automatic double. Nice piece of hitting for Matt Shaw. One out double.
The runner goes. The pitch outside. Throw to second. Head first slide. Safe at second base. Matt Shaw stole that one more on Bender than he did on the throw by Ramirez. Tucker hits a liner. Base hit left field. Shaw around third. He's going to score. Cubs lead 2-1. Cubs get a break.
What a break it was. 2-1 lead off of an error by the guy you're scared of him because he can hit the ball over the fence, Kyle Stowers. But that time he helped out the Cubs, and that's why the Cubs are able to take 2 out of 3 from the Marlins for the second time in about 10 days. And that's how the Cubs are getting through this 21-game stretch in which they will not play a team with a record over 500. They're 7-2 to start that stretch off. I say they need to go 15-6 to make their dominance be known. The next series, the biggest series they've faced in this stretch so far, because it's a team that people expected to challenge for the NL Central crown in the Cincinnati Reds. That series is on the road. Win 2 out of 3, you're good with that. Although Hunter Green is the first man up against Matt Boyd coming up tomorrow after a day off today. You are listening to Raheemian Harris. Layla's got the day off. Anthony Heron is in studio.
Well, Layla's got the show off. She's going to be a busy lady tonight.
Okay, you're right.
She got the show off.
Right, just the show off. She will be
putting
back
in that work this evening.
She'll be back on. Tune in tonight for the first ever Chicago Sky broadcast right here on 670 The Score as they host the New York Liberty at Wintrust Arena. Our own Layla Raheemi, she'll be on the call doing color alongside play-by-play, Kylan Mills, and Alyssa Bergamini for the game. Coverage beginning at 6:45 on The Score and the Odyssey app. But baseball-wise, the Cubs have to be feeling really good about the way things have gone against the Marlins after 6 against them. And, of course, the brutal crosstown sweep of the Chicago White Sox. But, Ant, this team is rolling. And I know it's bad competition. It's a couple of last-place teams. But you still have to beat them because you know other teams are going to beat them. And I'll say this. Matt Shaw, after getting 10 hits before being sent down, Triple A over 18 games. He's played 3 games since he's been back. He's got half his hit total, 5-4-11, and crucial moments. Not just the doubles that he's hit, including one that would have been an RBI double to win the game in game one. Of course, the Marlins walked that game off. But then in the series finale, the rubber game, he's able to draw a leadoff walk, then steal a bag, and then score on a Kyle Tucker base hit because Kyle Stowers couldn't get the job done in left field.
Matt Shaw's an athlete. He is. I covered his entire baseball career when he was at Maryland, just in my work with the Big Ten Network and Big Ten Radio. Got to talk to him a bunch during, well, you know, several times during that time of his career, also as he became the Big Ten Player of the Year before he left Maryland baseball. And as an infielder, super athletic and has a flair for the dramatic. And I feel like we're starting to get more of a sense for that, you know, walk-off bombs when he got sent down to the minors. But now here in some critical moments and kind of crunch time, late game sort of leverage situations, he's able to come up not only with kind of some big swinging hits, because for a guy who's, you know, for baseball standards, I wouldn't call him diminutive in stature, but certainly some of these guys, like the Cubs got some long builds in the lineup right now. Matt Shaw more stocky in his build, but he's got power. I mean, he can hit, he can drive the ball well over 500 feet when he really gets a hold of it. But he's not just a guy who's able to swing freely. He's also, as a defender, he's got a good nifty glove, and we've seen some of that on display here. Not the biggest arm after he plants himself, but he can get it there to be able to get a runner out, throw into first. But his ability to be able to kind of contort his body on some of these snags that he makes as an infielder. He was a shortstop at a couple of different of the infield positions, but largely a shortstop during his Maryland career. And he's just got an ability to pluck the ball and quickly transition into a throwing posture. And he's, you know, transitioning what we saw from him in college and now in a very small sample size and in short fashion, starting to see him realize that potential here with the Cubs. It's fun to watch that because, you know, we've talked about it before. When you see someone as a younger player and you watch them in their infancy and they start to now, as they've kind of come up through the ranks and now at the professional level, starting to realize some of that potential. It's just cool to see someone as they've ascended to the point they're at right now, but then there's always that stumbling block. And he's got several players, several teammates right now who he can sort of lean on. PCA, most recently, last year, went through some of his ups and downs. A few years ago, Ian Happ, riding that wave, going through some ups and downs before he became a consistent performer at the major league level, multi-time gold glover and all-star and all these other things. So Matt Shaw is hopefully on that trajectory, but he's got a lot of guys he can lean on and look to as he's kind of walking this path he's in.
Yeah, we talked to Ian Happ on Tuesday, and he talked about that process of coming up to the big leagues, being sent down, and then coming back with more confidence, another chance, and feeling more comfortable in your second time around. He certainly has looked supremely comfortable in his time since he's been back in those three games, coming up with multi-hit games. And it actually extends a hitting streak from when he was down before. He had gotten hits in his last couple of games. So he's got a modest five-game hitting streak right now, does Matt Shaw. But it's big because we've been talking about third base as this kind of black hole, and not just a black hole for the Cubs, but it's been a position where there's been a dearth of power and normalized talent throughout the league. And now if that becomes, let alone an average position, but a plus position for the Cubs, and you've got Matt Shaw who can hit in your nine hole from top to bottom, one through nine, this lineup looks like one of, if not, you can make a case for it, the most dangerous lineup in baseball based on what they've been able to do. And I really love the idea that the Cubs now have Matt Shaw in a position where they may not have to go out and get help at third base. Because that's the thing that everyone was kind of leaning into is this idea that if Matt Shaw comes back and he doesn't get the job done, they're going to have to go out and shop for a third baseman to help make this playoff push, not just to get to the playoffs, but to make a run once you get there.
And what I love is that now you see the ball club as a whole putting themselves in position where it's still a, I guess, quote-unquote, smart money approach the Cubs have attempted to make. They haven't just gone all in and kind of splashed the pot to put one of these Mets or even Red Sox-style rosters together with the overall just financial investment position by position. But they've certainly acquired some talent, some prove-it deals like Kyle Tucker, like we've seen them doing with certain guys in recent years. But with the way the squad is performing and leading this division, because last year I tried to make the case going into last season where there was a level of disappointment about the Cubs maybe not going a little bit further with the financial expenditures. I said, well, look at this division, though. Like, who's going to run away from the Cubs in this division?
How'd that work out?
And then the division ran away from the Cubs. And it didn't matter that they had spent kind of smart money because it wasn't enough. And it showed that they weren't the lineup, at least last season, that they thought they would have been. Now, this season, I would say they continue to spend smart money. They still haven't sort of pushed all the chips in, but because of their performance. This is really the formula that the Cubs have been hoping for, is that you would get a bunch of guys playing at least two, if not beyond, the back of the baseball card, and it all coalescing at the same time. How sustainable is this? That, to me, is worthy of question, because how long are you going to get Kyle Tucker in a contract year, playing at MVP caliber? And yeah, it was a small dip and a slump. Now, last couple of games, he's back to being Kyle Tucker. PCA looking like somebody who, why would you wait another 4 years to pay him? Just pay him like the MVP right now, which, all right, let's slow down a little bit.
Whoa, not like the MVP. We just want to pay him a nice nine-figure deal, which keeps him under club control through his arbitration years, let's say plus two. And now you've got a guy for close to a decade.
Why not do that 2 years from now?
2 years from now is going to be more expensive. That's why. And also, there's going to be a lockout. Just get him under contract.
Because, hurry up.
If you're already,
it's just different than we normally operate in baseball, I guess, is where my mind is at with it.
Not different than some teams, but that's what small market teams do. They get their guys up and they pay them to make sure they can keep them longer, because if you don't, then you end up having to trade them earlier because you're not going to be able to re-sign them as free agents.
But what we do know is PCA is going to be a member of the Cubs for the next four seasons, like regardless
That's
of what they're paying
enough.
Him. They got him.
And let me tell you something. If they do that and he's an all-star every year and he's in the MVP conversation, let alone win an MVP, and then they can't keep him past the 4 years because they don't want to pay the $40 million per whatever it is, I'm going to say you could have just signed him way back when for way less than that.
Right. I think it's fair.
And there's been nothing that the Cubs have done to this point that leads you to believe they would sign somebody to a contract more than what their highest paid contract has been so far.
But on the sliding scale, there's urgency with Kyle Tucker.
Oh, no.
There's a different type of urgency with Pete Crow Armstrong.
Two different conversations.
But if we agree the Cubs aren't going to spend huge on both of them right now, then to me, focus on paying Tucker. Focus on keeping Kyle Tucker around. Yeah. And then you got a couple of years at least to figure out what's happening with Pete Crow Armstrong. Because I don't think he's going to kind of, you know, take some kind of dip that's extended. He looks like an excellent player. But I wouldn't mind watching him prove it for another season or two to see if he's not going on this Luis Robert path, or I'm blanking on the center fielder from a couple of years ago that was like an all-star through the first half of the season.
David Eckstein.
Right.
It is not David Eckstein. I can guarantee it's not.
And I can't believe I'm blanking on his name. For the Cubs, but he was an all-star through the first half of the season, and then he, unfortunately, before they put the
Cody
nets
Bellinger?
Up, no.
Oh.
Before they put the nets up, he hit a kid with a ball in the front row, and he wept about it like we all did. And then
he
never was the same after
Thanks?
That. I'm going to look his name up in a moment. But my point is, we have seen flashes of brilliance. I would like to see, just like some of the examples on the South Side, where whether it's flashes of brilliance at the minor league level or at the major league level early, if you're going to pay someone like a real star of the sport, I would like to see them prove they're a star of the sport for a little bit longer.
Okay, you don't want to pay people. That's fine. We're broadcasting
I want to
live
pay Kyle Tucker.
From the Scores Hyundai Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. That's the voice of Anthony Heron. He's in for Leila Rahimi as we talk about the Cubs and their big win, 2-1 win, which proves a couple of things on a couple of different fronts. Here's why it was such an encouraging series deciding win.
What does it prove, Marshall?
It proves that they can win a game 2-1, which has not – that's been in doubt. That's been in doubt. Here, let me give you some numbers. 27-6. You know what that is? That's the Cubs' record this season when they score 4 runs or more. 27-6. That's good, right?
Yeah, it's impressive.
Score 4 runs, you're probably going to win.
Right, you better.
You're probably going to win. Meanwhile, that win yesterday, they played 16 games a season, the Cubs have, in which they've scored 3 runs or less. Out of those 16 games, how many do you think they've won?
16 games, 9.
How about 3?
Oh.
And yesterday was the third game. You have to be
I feel
able
like
to
I got
win.
Force punch right there. It's a lot less than I thought it was going
to
be.
I'm trying to explain to you why it's important that this 2-1 game happen. It's important because to win a game, even though it was against a bad Marlins team, 2-1 shows that you have the capability of doing that. And when you're in a 2-1 game, you know what's really important? The bullpen.
Right.
They've got to be able to hold on to a lead, or at least keep the game close enough so that you can win the game late. And last night we saw Daniel Palencia come in and get the save. And I'm on the fence on this. I know that's not my job. I'm supposed to have a firm opinion. I wanted Brad Keller in the ninth inning, but he was used earlier, and it appears they're going to go with the guy with the best quote-unquote stuff in Daniel Palencia. But, Ant, you saw the ninth inning yesterday.
Mm.
Daniel Palencia, he didn't blow people away, did he? He just kind of got 3 outs.
Right. Now, stuff is fantastic. But he throws the ball real hard, which I find impressive. You know, sometimes they hit it real hard coming right back at
him. Well, you know,
too.
The velocity leads into
right,
that.
Right, right. Yeah, there's a force, a reaction, an action, and everything
physics.
Else. Yeah, yeah. I didn't get an A in physics, but yes, there's some physics involved in that when you actually make contact with the ball. But it's got impressive velocity.
Yeah, but here's the thing. For Daniel Palencia, that was his second save opportunity in a matter of 3 days. The first save, he blew, as the Marlins were able to walk that off. This time, he gets the save. I don't know what the confidence level is in him in terms of how Craig Counsell views him, except for he has the most confidence of him out of everyone else in that bullpen right now to close games. And I don't know what that means when you look at the rest of the bullpen. They're going to need more arms. It's going to be a while. We heard from Jed Hoyer just the other day on this very radio program when he joined Mullin and Hall talking about the fact that a trade for external help bullpen-wise probably isn't going to come until closer to the trade deadline. And so they're kind of stuck with what they have. So if they can find a way to win games like the one they won yesterday, 2-1, it's beyond a sign of encouragement. It's really a step in growth in that this bullpen and this team finds a way to get it done, even if it may not be pretty. They have plenty of questions that need to be answered between now and the end of the season. But for right now, They're supposed to just put as much distance as possible between themselves and everybody else in their division. Enter the Cincinnati Reds for three on the road. Hunter Green, win game one with Boyd on the mound, and maybe you've got a chance to win yet another series and get closer to what I said they should be in this 21-game stretch against teams under 500, and that's 15-6. You go 15-6, people will be like, I don't care how bad the competition was. You won 15 out of 21 games.
The name I was blanking on earlier, thank you, text line, Albert Almora. That's who I was trying to think of. Handsome young lad, had a fantastic first half of the season in 2018. Actually didn't end up making the All-Star game. He was All-Star caliber through the first half of that season. Didn't end up getting voted into that All-Star game, but he was one of those guys who, for a while, there was a whole lot of buzz around town about that Cubs young center fielder, all the acrobatic grabs and plays he was making all over the place, how he upgraded the Cubs defense, and he was batting well over 300 that season, and he fizzled. And, you know, who knows, you know, what exactly it was. Maybe it was, you know, partly when, because it seemed to me, in my memory at least, I've kind of built it up in my brain as there was this moment where he hits a foul ball down, I think it was down the third base line, and he hits some young fan, I think it was a young girl, and he just kind of, you know, crumpled like we all did. And that was a key moment in baseball, finally putting nets up and making it a rule that all baseball stadiums would have nets up down each baseline. And kind of from that moment, it felt like that was kind of a, and maybe it's just this Hollywood thing in my head that I've built that as the dividing line for Albert Almora. But from that moment, at least for me, that was when he took a dip in his Cubs career. Still playing professional baseball, but he wasn't the same after that first half of the season where it looked like he was the future of center field for the Cubs. So PCA, certainly a more highly regarded prospect than Albert Almora was, but there was a fervor about whatever it was like six, seven years ago now where Almora seemed to be that next center field star until he wasn't. I just, you know, I want a little more extended sample size before I say PCA is a definitive star, stud, MVP, pay him like one of the greats in the sport. So let me see it for a year or two.
Albert Almora is not putting up PCA numbers. I want to point that out.
I think that's true.
And that it goes back not just to the first half of this season, but to the back half of last season. But back to Matt Shaw real quick, because I just want to really reiterate, he is the key going forward. If he continues to hit that lineup 1 through 9, there's no holes in the lineup. There's no holes in the lineup. Here's what Craig Counsell had to say post game yesterday about Shaw, not just hitting, but getting extra base hits.
I think that's Matt Shaw. I mean, I think that's, you know, we didn't see an extra base hit to the opposite field the first 3 weeks. And now we've seen three already. So I think that's what Matt, that's what you expect Matt to do. That's what Matt's good at doing. And so, you know, that's he's just in a better place, you know, from that result, whether it's caught or not, you know, whatever. But it's the ball's being hit the right way for what he's good at.
What Craig Counsell saw in this 3-game series against the Marlins, which, again, Matt Shaw 5-for-11, extra base hits, stolen base, game-winning runs scored. He saw the guy that he put 5 in the lineup on opening day. There's a reason he put him batting 5th in Japan against the Dodgers, because he thought, this is the guy that I will have. It wasn't that guy at the start of the season, but it very may well be that guy now.
And to your observation about the team as a whole real quick, what I love about what they're doing right now, winning these close games, you think back to last year and the comments that Jed Hoyer was making about basically having no comfortable victories. That matters so much for this team right now when you compare it with last year, because a lot of these same guys were playing all those games close and into the ninth inning last season. Now, a very similar lineup has added so much power and driving the ball over the fence so consistently. And so the comfortable victories that we're accustomed to this year, if there's some metamorphosis where it can be combined with the close wins from last year and the big comfortable wins from this year, and Jed's formula seems to be taking shape, because they've gotten really good this season at the thing they weren't really good at last year as an offense.
3-13 in games in which they score 3 runs or less. We'll see if that record improves, or if they just keep scoring so many runs, it doesn't even matter. That's what we're keeping an eye on.